Chapter 9, Cancer and Harassment. We need to know the prognosis. Although it didn't need a reply, Ladysmith behaved according to her apparently driven cruelty by instructing Macaulay to pursue her order that I should reply. After I had surgery and had been discharged from ICU, I saw that Macaulay had emailed me while I was actually undergoing surgery on the 31st of October 2016. Disability discrimination while actually in surgery. Only Ladysmith could achieve that. The personification of disability discrimination. A walking manifestation of disability discrimination. Macaulay's email was sent on the 31st of October 2016 at 15:37 hours. I was actually undergoing full abdominal surgery under general anaesthetic at that very time. The message read, "Hello, John. I hope you're progressing as well as possible in the circumstances. Ladysmith has asked me to contact you in connection with an email sent to you on 21st of October, to which she is hoping for a reply. It may be that you didn't receive it, because I'm aware that emails I sent to your child abuse address did not get through for whatever technical reason. Colin." What a couple of monsters. I have never replied. After surgery on the 31st of October 2016, I was looked after in ICU until 3rd of November 2016. I was completely spaced out in ICU. I barely remember it. I remember feeling really vulnerable when I was discharged from ICU. ICU was very quiet and peaceful. The ward was chaotic in comparison, with lots of noise, visitors, TV, clinical interventions, etc. I was attended to by a student doctor who looked unfeasibly young to be necessarily qualified. The cannula she inserted into my hand was not well located. It became infected. I felt really insecure. I felt scared. I felt really physically weak a couple of days post-op. Still on morphine and with a big wound in the centre of my being. At about 3:28 p.m, my phone started buzzing. Someone was phoning me. It was Macaulay. I handed the phone to my wife. She didn't catch the call, but phoned him back outside the ward. She told him I was just out of intensive care and to leave me alone. Macaulay made it clear he wasn't just calling on his own behalf. He was asserting the authority of Ladysmith. Macaulay said, "It's just we're looking for an update, a prognosis." Unconscionable. My wife told him that my prognosis was an entirely private matter. In fact, the material on which the prognosis depended was off to histology for analysis and staging. He was still talking when the call was ended. It only lasted 1 minute 12 seconds. She was too upset to take any more. Harassment. To add further injury to insult, harassment and discrimination, I had submitted 2 fee notes for the work I'd done from home, with permission, while waiting to have surgery. Those fee notes were for work carried out on the 11th, 12th, 15th and 17th to 20th of October 2016. After I was eventually discharged from hospital on the 8th of November 2016, I saw that these fees hadn't been paid. That was unusual and it had never happened before. I got my clerk to inquire. Ladysmith had instructed that my fee notes for that time, after my cancer diagnosis, when she had authorised me to work from home, should not be paid. Those fees still haven't been paid at the time of writing this, almost 8 years later. She hadn't seen evidence that I had been working. Swear words fail me. After surgery, I felt that I'd never get out of hospital. In fact, I was only in for 8 nights, but it felt much longer. I even felt that I became institutionalised. It really was a life-changing experience. I was completely dependent on the nursing and auxiliary staff. My surgeon, Mr. Berlansky, was the person whose view of my progress was vitally important. I'll tell you more about all that later. But I felt weak and scared, and for good reason. That's important here because while I was really unwell, I became sort of terrified about Ladysmith, Macaulay and the others. There was a factual basis for that because Macaulay had been sending me emails and phoning me on Ladysmith's behalf. I was having cancer surgery and they wanted rid of me, to cancel me. So why continue to pursue me while I was weak and in hospital? To intimidate, harass and victimise me. I was convinced that Ladysmith's behaviour was so extreme, so self-evidently unacceptably cruel, that everyone would immediately see how dangerous she is. Well, that's not the way it turned out, unfortunately, and it's certainly not the way it's turned out at the time of dictating this chapter, which is in April 2024. They covered up for her cruelty and unlawfulness. They continue to do so, as you'll see. Especially Dunlop, the great faculty reformer, the dean who focused on well-being for faculty members. Except me. I was othered for that one. I was discharged from hospital on Tuesday, 8th November 2016. I was so pleased and relieved, I'll never forget the feeling. It was like a new dawn. There was even a special red sky at dawn that morning. I still got a photo of it. I had it on a mug. My discharge summary made reference to concern on my part about work colleagues threatening me. Clinical staff were even asking my wife if I was imagining things. They were sceptical about whether what I was reporting was actually happening. By lawyers. She was able to reassure them that it was true and that I was sane. I was so weak I could hardly walk. I had to have an arm of support. I had a big hole and a wound in my abdomen. I felt very vulnerable and weak. I was genuinely scared of what Ladysmith, Macaulay and the groupthink might do. I thought I knew by then that Ladysmith knew no limits or boundaries. If she thought she could do something to me, she'd do it. Even then, I didn't appreciate the lengths that a dangerous operator like Ladysmith would go to. I do now, and I'm learning all the time, at the escalating victimisation being perpetrated on me, now that I've been monstered. You see, in the disability discrimination scenario that was happening to me, I was still just at the othering stage. The stage where, although you have rights, you're somehow, in some nebulous way, not able to rely on those rights. You're other. Being the sneaky operator he is, Macaulay began to make sure that any communications he wanted to get to me were made through our mutual Faculty of Advocates stable clerk, Liz Manderson. This was a particularly Macaulay-like, sneaky medium. He knew that Liz would have to do as he asked. He's a senior member of our stable, Arnott Manderson. He knew too that Liz and I regularly communicated with one another and had one another's mutual trust and respect. So Macaulay sneaked into the clerk's area at Parliament House on the 15th of November 2016 and spoke to Liz Manderson. He asked her to pass on a message to me after first of all pretending to be concerned about my health. This was 1 week post-hospital discharge, and I was still largely in my bed and not completely on my feet yet post-surgery. I was unable to sleep normally. Liz phoned me to pass on the message. I asked Liz to record it in an email and send it to me. I asked her to do the same for any further communications by Macaulay. I also asked Liz not to pass on any detail about my health to him. You can see him sneaking up to Liz, pretending to be concerned about my health, and pumping her for information. Liz is a really open person. She'd have had no suspicion that she should be on guard at all. He's also a very senior member of our stable. Then came the message. This is what it said. Hi, John. I hope you're feeling good today. Colin Macaulay came into the office yesterday afternoon and asked how you were. I updated him on your health. Colin has been asked by her ladyship, Lady Smith, if arrangements can be put in place to collect your inquiry laptop, BlackBerry, phone, and any inquiry papers from your home. It is to do with the Data Protection Act. Please can you let me know when would be convenient to you. Thanks, Liz. This was Macaulay communicating the latest threat from Ladysmith. My inquiry materials were kept in my study under lock and key. There were no data protection issues. Ladysmith was simply trying to complete the task of erasing me from the SCAI, and trying to do it when she knew I was at my weakest. As I've told you already, my fees for work carried out at home while sick and awaiting surgery hadn't been paid. Ladysmith had instructed that they were not to be paid. Utterly vindictive and devoid of normal, compassionate judgment that most human beings can at least aspire to. Right and honourable? I don't think so. And it didn't stop there. On the 16th of November 2016, I saw that Jameson had circulated on 7th November 2016 that Swinney had made ministerial determinations to appoint two additional junior counsel to the SCAI. Ladysmith appointed Kate Anna MacLeod advocate. Of course, this exacerbated my feelings that I was being replaced, and I was being replaced, but it also made me laugh. It was funny because MacLeod had applied to the SCAI in April 2016 for work taking evidence from witnesses. I was part of the interview panel with Summers. I liked MacLeod and I thought she was okay. Summers was having none of it. She made a big anxious issue of it. She was adamant that MacLeod was too junior at the bar and didn't have the necessary experience for such an important role. I laughed when I wondered whether she had raised a peep when Ladysmith appointed MacLeod as her own choice, no interview required. It tells you something about Ladysmith. She just does what she wants, a law unto herself. Right and honourable, born that way. No interviews or any of that nonsense. No one questions her. It tells you something about the Faculty of Advocates and how it works. It's that sort of nepotism and favour that creates and reinforces links and connections. Links and connections built on fees, where your money is going to come from. Remember Macaulay's recollections about Hardy helping him when he was a young advocate? It also tells you something about Summers. Adamantly stamping her feet, preventing MacLeod's appointment to take inquiry evidence in April 2016, when her intention was to undermine Susan O'Brien and everything she wanted to do. She was going to make it part of her resignation issue then. Not a peep when the same insufficiently experienced counsel is appointed to the much more significant role by Ladysmith in November 2016. Why didn't she resign again, on principle? Because she has none. It calls into question the ability of Summers to exercise balanced, objective, and consistent professional judgment. And more, her honesty. But Ladysmith isn't one to be deterred when she decides on a course of action. Not by cancer, not by frailty and the need for recovery. As it turns out, not even by the law. On the 28th of November 2016, I got an email from Liz Manderson. It said, "Hi John. On the back of my conversation with CJMCA, that's Colin Macaulay, on Wednesday 23rd November 2016, CJMCA phoned me on Thursday 24th November. CJMCA says, this does not come from me, it comes from Ladysmith. Ladysmith wrote to John on the 21st of October asking for John to send CJMCA the work he had done and nothing has appeared. That's why payment has been held back. Rate your fee for work undertaken on 23rd to 29th of May, 38 hours. Ladysmith knows on 27th of May you were doing a hearing. Did you make an allowance for the preparation and attendance? Thanks, Liz." You remember that Ladysmith's email to me on 21st October 2016 was a 0 hours contract email. You can see that what Ladysmith was now communicating, through Macaulay's sneakiness, was an assertion that I was supposed to have been working, summarising what I'd been working on while I was ill, working at home and waiting for surgery. While I was responding promptly to her messages and she was thanking me for doing so, I was obviously working. The degree of cruelty and callousness is breathtaking. And now a question was being raised about a previous fee note from May 2016. Blatant harassment. That was a week when we were all in London, meeting with the ICSA team. If anything, I had vastly undercharged for my time away from home on inquiry business. Ladysmith was trying to found on her knowledge that I had appeared in an appeal in the Inner House during that week. All it shows is that I worked too many hours at a time when I was ill. But it also shows that time was being spent groupthinking about how to harass me. Even when Ladysmith and Macaulay knew that I was so frail and vulnerable. Shame on both and the other morons setting this up. Public money was being spent on this. In fact, Ladysmith has now spent very considerable sums of public money targeting, setting up and fighting with me. You should have a look. Why, you may be wondering. That's not entirely clear from the narrative just yet. But it became clear when I eventually produced my summary of the work that I had done in my note dated 1st of April 2019. I infer that's the real reason that the civil servants, Murray Sinclair, Donald Henderson, and yes, Swinney, wanted me and Susan O'Brien's original panel off the inquiry. Ladysmith's Genghis Khan approach in this context, regardless of the law, actually had the ultimate purpose of covering up, by determination not to investigate, serious allegations of organised child trafficking and sexual abuse involving judges and members of the legal profession, among others. That's why. I asked Liz Manderson for a summary of her communications with Macaulay about all of this. She sent me another message on 28th of November 2016. Morning, John. When I arrived back in the office on Wednesday 23rd of November 2016, Andrew said Colin Macaulay had been in the office on Tuesday afternoon looking for me. Andrew asked if I could give him a ring. I phoned CJMCA on Wednesday morning 23rd November and left a message for him to ring me back. I spoke to Colin around lunchtime. The first thing Colin asked is, how is John? I told Colin I had just spoken to you on your way back from the nurse, just getting your dressing changed as you had an infection and got more antibiotics. I told Colin you have good days and bad days and you'd be starting chemo before Christmas, which would probably not finish until June 2017. He asked if I had heard back from you, Ray, the collection of the inquiry laptop, BlackBerry and papers. I said yes, you would get things sorted, but there was some material you wanted to keep. Colin said that was fine. I mentioned to Colin you would not be returning the various items until your two outstanding fees were paid in full, both issued in October 2016. Colin said he doesn't know anything about this, but would pass this on to the inquiry team. I advised Colin of the date of issue of your fees, amounts, and that fees before and after that date for other members had all been paid in full. I did say this might just be an oversight, or the fees might have been misplaced. I said I was more than happy to send the inquiry team a copy of your outstanding fees. Colin said he would pass this on. Thanks, Liz. So you can see what was happening here. Macaulay was clearly being required to do Ladysmith's dirty work for her. It seems he chose to try to do that in his customary sneaky manner through the clerks. Typically pathetic and cowardly. And this was happening within an organisation that even at the time had an equality and diversity policy. It prevented members of faculty from acting in a discriminatory manner towards others. I even had the support of the then Dean and Vice Dean, Gordon Jackson and Angela Graham. But they had nothing to offer in the face of a determined campaign of disability discrimination by Ladysmith. You'll see how things nosedive when I don't have the support of the Dean and Vice Dean anymore, when it's Dunlop and his regime of meek, fawning followers. And he overtly and aggressively supports Ladysmith. You'll also see that Dunlop is actually trying to argue in the Employment Tribunal that the protections in Section 48 of the Equality Act 2010 about advocates don't apply to him. Is this really what lawyers are meant to do? Is it ethical? I don't think so. I'd been warned repeatedly by my doctors that I must stop engaging with this hostility from Ladysmith because I needed to focus all of my energy on physical and mental recovery in order to be strong enough for chemotherapy. So I gave my clerk my detailed responses to what Ladysmith was harassing me about and said I wouldn't be available for any further discussion for a number of weeks or months. That prompted the following sneaky communication from Ladysmith via Macaulay, via Liz, on 2nd of December 2016. Hi John, I hope you're okay today. I left a message on your mobile yesterday saying Mr. Macaulay had come into the office Thursday the 1st of December. Ladysmith must have your laptop, BlackBerry and any inquiry papers back as soon as possible. They're prepared to come down to your house or to PH, that's Parliament House, to collect. Once they have been returned, Ladysmith will seriously consider paying your outstanding fees. Thanks, Liz. By the way, that's another honking lie. It goes without saying that I didn't trust Ladysmith or Macaulay at all. The Dean, Gordon Jackson QC, agreed to help me if he could. He was encouraged to do so by the Vice Dean, Angela Graham QC. Their willingness to at least try to help falls to be sharply contrasted with the present Dean, Roddy Dunlop, who acts as counsel for and otherwise conspires with Ladysmith. Roddy. He calls himself at Roddy QC on Twitter. He doesn't do what he says he does. I mean as Dean of Faculty. Changing the culture. Anti-bullying and anti-discrimination champion. Not if you're me, he isn't. I've sued him too in relation to all of this and his blind support for Ladysmith's bullying and victimisation. I've raised a claim against him for unlawful victimisation. a supreme ego, dangerous, a fixer in almost everything. Trams, Celtic, NHS GGC, Salmond, Ladysmith and the SCAI, and much, much more. And Twitter legal advisor to the world at large. You should have a look. Anointed from the beginning of time to be Dean of the Faculty of Advocates. Jackson had a meeting with Ladysmith in Glasgow on my behalf on the 7th of December 2016. This is what he wrote to me afterwards. John, I've had a meeting with Ladysmith. Without going back over all that has happened, I think there are a few issues that, if resolved, would help the way forward. Your appointment has not been terminated, as far as Ladysmith is concerned. Subject to your health and other conflict of interest restrictions previously discussed, there is no reason why you cannot be asked to carry out further work in the future. I do consider that you will need to return the items requested, such as laptop, etc., and you should arrange to do that as soon as possible. I appreciate you want payment of the two outstanding fees. I've seen these and they simply list the days and hours worked at home. Ladysmith wants some further specification of what was done, and that's perhaps not unreasonable. My impression is that this doesn't need to be very full or detailed, and if that can be provided, the fees can then be paid. Certainly, I will push for that to happen. More importantly, look after yourself and get better as soon as possible. Gordon. I went back to him on a few of those points. I wanted to be clear that Ladysmith wasn't saying I'd done anything wrong. I hadn't. All I'd done was not resign when she and the groupthink were applying all manner of escalating pressure while I was very ill to try to force me to do that. I also wanted to be paid my fees that had been cruelly and illegitimately withheld. I also wanted an apology and recognition that, for a self-employed person with a family and a very scary, uncertain future, that was a very important matter. So was the issue of whether or not I'd be able to work on SCAI work when I was well enough to do so, whenever that may be. I had no idea what was going to happen to me. This is what I wrote to Jackson. Gordon, thank you for this and for taking the time you have taken on my behalf. Can I simply be clear that Ladysmith is not suggesting in any way that I have done anything wrong or disconformed to normal practice, even the detail provided in the fee notes? What's being requested is a departure from the norm to date. I therefore resent the implication that I may not have done work as feed for. As you're aware, I do not accept that my appointment has not been effectively terminated. The terms in which she has inflated my legitimate conflict of interest consideration make that clear. It appears to me, taken along with Ladysmith's personalised course of harassment of me, to be inconsistent with a continuing appointment that I'm asked to return laptop, BlackBerry and papers, etc., and not given the opportunity to work at home as and when I'm able to do so over the coming months. However, having sought your advice, I will do that. I will also provide further specification of work undertaken in the weeks commencing 10th and 17th October 2016. Thank you again for your help and good wishes, John. This was Jackson's reply. John, there was certainly no accusation made by Ladysmith. She also maintains your appointment has not been terminated, but as you will not be working in the near future, it's appropriate for data protection compliance that the items be returned. I appreciate you take a different view about your appointment being terminated, but I have neither the locus nor expertise to comment on that one way or another. If there is a continuing problem about fees being paid, please let me know, as I would certainly hope that can be resolved. Kind regards, Gordon. So I'm asking you to take special note of what Ladysmith told Jackson, the Dean of Faculty, because it's not what she said later on when she had to be challenged about being the first Scottish judge ever to be accused of demonstrable allegations, which remain true and are produced later on in this text, of unlawful disability discrimination, harassment and victimisation. Ladysmith is a liar. You can reach your own conclusions on her astonishingly cool treatment of me when I was at my most vulnerable, when any normal person would most likely feel moved to a compassionate response. I'll pay the fees, we can see what work you can do later, just recover from surgery, get through your 8 cycles of chemotherapy and get better. You need to be cancer free if you can be type thing. No, not Ladysmith and not the groupthink. Read on. Assisted by others like Brian Napier, KC, demeaning himself on her behalf before employment tribunals, and Dunlop in the Court of Session and later as Dean, purporting to discipline me on Ladysmith's behalf in August 2022, cc'd to Lady Anne Smith. A complete joke, except he takes himself so seriously. That's the thing about the othering process that the group thinks civil servants on the SCAI are experts in. They make it so that the norms, laws and rules that apply to everyone don't apply, for no justifiable reason, to a particular, singled out, targeted person. In this campaign, it's me. It was previously Susan O'Brien. I don't get to rely on disability discrimination law. Now that's not because it doesn't apply to me and to Lady Smith and the SCAI. It's just because she's Lady Smith who demands and gets support from all these fawning fools. It's a really, really sick form of corruption being applied here to a person at his most vulnerable moment in adult life, at least so far. And it got worse when she was challenged, and worse and worse, right up to and including the media monstering, and no one challenges her or even allows her to be held to account. Is this really judicial or even acceptable behaviour of a public official? Doesn't it call into question her ability to exercise normal, rational human judgment in ordinary matters affecting people? Never mind the extreme circumstances affecting victims of child sexual or other abuse. Did Lady Smith leave me alone to recover from surgery, start chemotherapy, and put all of the work-related anxiety out of my mind? Not on your Nelly. Consistent with her indisputable status as a bully with defective judgment, the Genghis Khan persona identified by her judicial colleagues, Lady Smith struck again before Christmas in 2016, just before Christmas. At 16:40 on 21st of December 2016, I got an email from the Vice Dean, Angela Graham. It read, "Hi John, I hope you're coping with your treatment and I'm really sorry to bother you. Would you have time for a very quick chat? Angela." I phoned Angela. She told me Lady Smith had been in contact with her, alleging that I was communicating with survivor groups or some nonsense like that. Lady Smith wanted it to be passed on that she was considering raising proceedings against me for interim interdict in the court session. A home game for her. Happy Christmas. I had to instruct and lodge a caveat. I was hardly able to leave my bed, never mind whip up trouble for Lady Smith with survivor groups. Also, I'd been warned by the doctors, you must put all the work stuff out of your mind if you stand a realistic chance of a full recovery. This was Lady Smith trying to make sure that didn't happen. She really has great judgment, doesn't she? If you're Genghis Khan. And so ended 2016, worrying about what Lady Smith might try to do to me while I was trying to focus on just getting through 8 cycles of chemotherapy and the hope for recovery. At all times, Lady Smith tried to assert her supreme and unquestionable authority. This is the essential element of her whole concept of being and her principal modus operandi. You can see it in the actions of Macaulay on her behalf. This is a guy who's been an independent advocate practicing at the bar for in excess of 40 years. Yet somehow he feels compelled to tarnish his long-standing relations with even his clerk to comply with what Lady Smith wants him to do, no matter how gruesome. Do you really think that Macaulay wanted to harass me in the way that the records detailed above demonstrate? He's a bloke without any substantial backbone. There's no way he'd have been acting like that of his own volition. Then there are the group-thinking civil servants on the SCAI. They now have a supreme leader who must be obeyed. Why? Apparently because she's a judge. Lady Smith was a senator of the Court of Session at that time, an inner house judge, but that has absolutely nothing to do with enhancing, supplementing or otherwise bolstering the SCAI. The Inquiries Act 2005 provides that the chair of an inquiry panel may be a judge. No doubt that's so the findings of a public inquiry, in appropriate circumstances, may be more robustly stated or that a greater degree of substance, scrutiny and authority is added to the inquiry subject matter. But appointing a judge as chair of an inquiry panel doesn't add anything to the powers available to the judge under the Inquiries Act 2005. The powers given to a judge under the Act are the same as those given to a chair who's not a judge. It's important to note, however, that when a judge takes up an appointment as an inquiry chair under the 2005 Act, the judge steps outside the normal, rarefied judicial environment of the court structure in which the judge normally functions. The judge becomes the chair of an inquiry panel under the Act. If the judge is the only member of that panel, the judge is the panel under the Act. If the judge seeks to act as a human resources manager, but with the supreme and unquestionable authority that a judge normally has in a court, the Act doesn't provide any authority for such an approach. Often, you'll understand, public inquiries under the Act have large numbers of people working on them in all sorts of different capacities. If the judge, as inquiry panel in terms of the 2005 Act, is minded to act as a manager of people, the judge is well advised to know the detail of the rights provided for in the Equality Act 2010. I'm asking you to note at this point the part quoted from Lady Smith's email to me on the 21st of October 2016. If you're like me, you'll maybe wonder how a judge could call it so wrong. How could a judge be stupid enough to go on about a 0 hours contract and about me not having any rights in the work environment when I had cancer? Supreme authority or supremely unlawful? You can decide, but to my mind, definitely supremely cruel and concerningly inhumane. Lady Smith's treatment of me when I had cancer seems to me to raise real, enduring, and very concerning questions about her ability to exercise normal, compassionate judgment in relation to a fellow human facing the trauma and ordeal of a cancer diagnosis. A person with a family. The relentless pursuit of me by Lady Smith through Macaulay's sneakiness isn't justifiable. But why would she do that? Surely it's not just because she didn't like me. My view, based on my whole experience looking back from this point, is this. Lady Smith's relentless pursuit of me, the othering conflict of interest process fueled by the civil servants, seeking sanction for their demands, stamped with Lady Smith's supreme authority, and the sheer vigour with which all of those aspects were attempted, were all justified in the groupthink zone by the need for the SCAI to steer away from the organised child trafficking matters that I considered so important with alleged involvement of lawyers and judges. It seems reasonable to me to infer that Lady Smith's agenda was driven by this imperative in order that sensitive matters that many Scottish lawyers knew a lot about wouldn't be investigated by the SCAI. This was the reason for the calling in of Summers for supervision by Murray Sinclair in 2016. This was the reason for the nuclear option threat by Henderson on 7th of January 2016, at the very start of the inquiry. This was the reason for the othering and subsequent monstering, undermining and effective removal of Susan O'Brien. This was the reason that Scotland didn't want Michael Lamb, a world-renowned expert prying into the dirty secrets of some at the top, which many others also at the top knew lots about. This was the reason that I had to be removed from the SCAI from day one. I knew, or they thought I knew, where the bodies were buried. This was the reason that Lady Smith had complete confidence that no matter how extreme and outrageous her conduct was towards me when I had cancer, she would be supported by a system calibrated to cover up where necessary rather than to fearlessly investigate and learn from the organised sexual and other exploitation of young people who deserved care and nurture from others. When Susan O'Brien was first appointed as chair of the SCAI and took up office in October 2015, who was one of the first to contact her with a lunch offer and suggestions about how to run a public inquiry? Lord Hardy. You and I are the chairs of the only two public inquiries running in Scotland just now, type thing. Even at that stage, Susan told me Hardy was keen to emphasise that the SCAI should be careful not simply to believe historical allegations by alleged survivors without scrutiny. There may be something in that advice, but it appeared suspicious when the advisor might be the wolf in sheep's clothing.